Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, coming to you today with another Musings from Northern California. It's a spectacularly beautiful day today. This is April 8, which is the birthday of Dr. Harvey Cushing and the day that we celebrate Cushing's Awareness Day. As many of you might know, Cushing's syndrome is a particular syndrome where patients have features that resemble those of a patient that Harvey Cushing first reported in about 1914. And there are all sorts of things going on, semantics, Cushing syndrome, Cushing's disease, etc. We won't get into that now, but in honor of Cushing's Awareness Day, I wanted to read a couple of excerpts from a book that Jorge and I put together through Pituitary World News on Cushing's.
This Pituitary podcast is brought to you exclusively by Pituitary World News. Now back to Dr. Blevins.
All right, so we decided to put this book together, and we'll have a series of books on different disease states. Our first book will be on Cushing syndrome. And I'm going to read some excerpts from three separate chapters to hopefully give you an idea of the things that we're doing with this particular book. The first chapter is chapter one, and it's titled Semantics, where we'll go through the different terms, Cushing syndrome, Cushing's disease, etc. And I'm going to pick up in the middle of the chapter here. It said, Cushing syndrome is a term used to describe the constellation of features alluded to by Harvey Cushing when he described his patient Minnie G. Again, these features are seen in patients with the full-blown, most severe form of the disorder, and they are the ones that are most profoundly hypercortisolemic. The same features develop in patients who take excessive doses of glucocorticoid or steroid medications for various and sundry conditions, including asthma, allergies, inflammatory conditions affecting the skin, joints, other organs and tissues, etc. In fact, the most common cause of Cushing syndrome in a patient sitting in a physician's waiting room is steroid medications. This is often referred to as iatrogenic Cushing syndrome. Currently, we recognize that many patients who prove to have ACTH-secreting pituitary adenomas and adrenal diseases that produce excessive amounts of cortisol do not develop classic features like those of Minnie G. For these patients, the moniker Cushing syndrome has done them a disservice because they often have a delay in diagnosis since they never develop the classic appearance for which the syndrome was named. The term subclinical Cushing syndrome has been used to refer to some patients found to have adrenal and pituitary lesions, demonstrated abnormalities in cortisol secretion, and minimal to no clinical features of cortisol excess. It really doesn't fit because many of these patients have weight gain, hypertension, or diabetes mellitus, and those are anything and everything but subclinical. Hidden hypercortisolism is a term that has been coined to identify those patients who present with one or more clinical features such as hypertension, diabetes mellitus, or osteoporosis, but not with the traditional appearance, which are found to have hypercortisolism that was determined after testing, even though it was not suspected clinically. I don't particularly care much for this term either because it's not hidden at all if those patients had the manifestations in the first place. It's best described as clinically unsuspected. And now from chapter 9 on the 24-hour urine-free cortisol. At the time of my fellowship training, the diagnosis of Cushing syndrome or hypercortisolism was thought to be definitive if patients had urine cortisol excretion rates greater than 3 times the upper limit of normal. Of course, lesser degrees of elevation were acceptable if one had other substantiating evidence, such as failure to suppress cortisol excretion with the low-dose dexamethasone suppression test, elevated ACTH levels in the presence of a pituitary adenoma, marked clinical features, etc. I learned early on that there are patients with high normal or slightly elevated cortisol levels who developed Cushingoid features and proved to have the disease. I always felt it was important to be on the lookout for these patients. Over the course of my career, there has been a slow evolution of thought regarding urine cortisol excretion rates. Most physicians accept that we no longer need to have levels greater than 3 times the normal to be definitive regarding a diagnosis. Plenty of physicians don't trust the test and no longer recommend it. I understand their concerns, as we now know that there is a significant overlap in urine cortisol excretion rates between groups of normal individuals, patients with pseudo-Cushing syndrome, and those with bona fide disease. I believe they are in error because it's still a good test to document the level of cortisol excretion. That provides useful information about the severity of the illness, is diagnostic a significant proportion of the time, provides useful clinical pathologic correlates with regards to symptomatology, and establishes a baseline for subsequent follow-up. The result also provides documentation and records an important manifestation of the underlying disease. And then from the chapter 6 on the overnight 1 milligram dexamethasone suppression test. When it was first developed, the diagnostic cutoff for this test was a cortisol level of 5.0 microgram per deciliter. Less than that was considered normal. Higher than that was considered to indicate or correlate with pathologic hypercortisolism. The sensitivity and specificity of the test have been all reported to be variable at that level. In my opinion, this cutoff serves better as a diagnostic test rather than as a screening test when one looks at the sensitivity and specificity pairs. The truth is, it didn't serve very well as a screening test because some patients with Cushing syndrome due to pituitary disease suppressed to as low as 2 microgram per deciliter. To improve sensitivity, in other words, to identify more or even most of those patients who really have the disease, the cutoff was lowered and is now accepted to be 1.8 micrograms per deciliter. That's great, but this cutoff comes with a price. The price, or cost, is that the test is less specific. That means there will be more people who have positive tests who don't have a disease or disorder of cortisol secretion. Those are people with false positive tests, and it's important to identify them so they are not inappropriately treated. Based on several studies that I have reviewed, I would estimate that the specificity for this test to cut off to be around 65 to 75%. Others have suggested that the specificity is as high as 90%. Regardless, this means a significant number of patients will have a false positive test. This is a characteristic, however, of a good screening test. Screening tests assume positive tests will be followed by additional studies to determine whether patients truly have the disease in question. Specifically, that means that if a patient has an abnormal overnight 1 milligram dexamethasone suppression test, technically, one should do additional studies to prove the diagnosis. Now, of course, I've seen plenty of patients who fail miserably and have cortisol levels as high as 10 to 15 microgram per deciliter. It's clear these patients have disordered cortisol secretion. Yet, it's always best to quantify cortisol production in other ways and to further characterize the underlying disorder to allow for specific therapy. In summary, while the result may prove to be abnormal in many patients, especially those with adrenal disorders, the results may be equivocal, not at all diagnostic, and some normal people won't suppress fully either. All right, well, I hope that was informative. The book that we're putting together has 37 chapters, a number of interesting figures, and covers all sorts of topics, and it includes largely some of my observations throughout my career of taking care of lots of patients with Cushing's disease and Cushing syndrome of different causes, and a review of the things that I've learned along the way, and a lot of my ideas, notions, and nonsense, you might say. At any rate, I hope that you all have a wonderful day and can do whatever you can to heighten the awareness of Cushing's disease on this particular day, April 8th, not only this year, but every day of the year for every year, as long as you're interested in doing so. At Pituitary World News, we certainly get involved and try to do what we can to heighten awareness of conditions and their treatments. So look forward to having this book out so you can get yourself a copy and learn as much as you can about this particularly interesting medical condition. So that's it for me. Have a wonderful day.